Hey everyone, before we get started with the episode, I wanted to tell you about a very cool thing. I am having a special Thanksgiving / Black Friday sale on the yearly level of the Paranormal Plus Club. And if you are currently a monthly member and you want to convert over, you may want to consider it. You get a $15 discount off your first year. And then also, you get your choice of one of my three ebooks. And the offer is available right now through the end of November. So here's the way it's going to work. Because you are an existing member, there's a little bit different process we have to go through if you want to upgrade from monthly to yearly. And the way you do it is just drop me an email at jim@jimherold.com and just say, I want to upgrade to yearly. And then I'll send you an email with the process so we can connect your new yearly membership to your existing account. It is a great time to upgrade because the price will never be lower. As I've mentioned, I will eventually be increasing the price for new members or people at a new level. I haven't been able to do that just because there's a lot of technology involved in it that I didn't realize. And my main concern is keeping the price the same for you, my existing members. But if you're monthly and you're considering yearly, it is an absolutely great time to jump on board. So check it out. The best way to do it is to send me an email saying, yes, Jim, I want to take care of your upgrade offer at jim@jimherold.com. And I will send you the information how to do it without missing an episode. Thank you so much for supporting the shows. And here is this program. I hope you enjoy it. Fleeting glimpses of things seen through a veil, darkly. Do we understand the meaning of these visions of life? Why we are here and how little of our existence we truly understand? Tonight we will talk of these things on The Other Side. Welcome to The Other Side. I am Jim Herold and so glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to have something totally different. We're going to talk about love. We're going to start off the program and talk to Eve Lorgan about the dark side of Cupid. And then we're going to follow up with a second interview, and this one is with Sarah Spencer, and we're going to talk about writing paranormal romance. I'm looking out my window today, and it is a very cold and snowy day, so thought it would be appropriate to warm things up a little bit on the other side with some hot talk. Not really that hot, but just matters of the heart, good and maybe not so good. And here it is. Now, the name of our show is The Other Side, and we're going to talk about the other side of love. Specifically, we're going to talk about the dark side of Cupid, love affairs, the supernatural, and energy vampirism. Our guest is Eve Lorgan. She is the author of said book. And Eve has a long background that really, really fits this book in terms of her research work. She is a 20-plus year researcher and hypnotherapist in anomalous trauma. This spectrum includes alien ET encounters, paranormal experience, and other dimensional visitations. The focus of her two books reveal taboo aspects of how love relationships have been orchestrated, interfered with, or disrupted by paranormal sources. Eve also holds a BS in biochemistry as well as a master's degree in counseling psychology. Her scientific and intuitive skills have contributed to her success in understanding these otherworldly experiences. While research is important, her priority is in support, healing, and empowered sovereignty for her clients. Eve Lorgan, welcome to the program today.
Oh, thank you for having me on today.
Now, you obviously have a very interesting background, but how in the world did you stumble on this idea of the dark side of Cupid?
Probably by accident, you know. But actually, my research actually began with alien abduction research and UFO phenomena. And I just had an interest in that because of my own experiences in life and paranormal experiences as well. So I started doing research on the alien encounter UFO phenomenon and had a support group for people probably in the 1990s. That was around the same time I got my degree in counseling psychology, where I really wanted to focus on anomalous trauma because there wasn't a lot of professionals out really specializing in that. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot through the people who claim like alien visitations in terms of certain patterns and kinds of things that they experience that do relate very much to the paranormal. In fact, the paranormal is a really big part of their lives. So as a result of studying and working with that for a number of years, one of the things that had come up was this phenomenon of what appeared to be orchestrated love obsessions through some kind of, quote, paranormal source, which in the beginning we believed and Babel thought it was, let's say, the alien beings or the ETs that were the primary ones involved in someone's case where they had multiple alien encounter histories.
Mm-hmm.
And this could be like the alien greys or the reptilians or the insectoids, or maybe it was humans or any other type that they might have perceived them as aliens or angels. But as I worked over the years, I started to see patterns emerge that were consistent, and it wasn't always necessarily related to aliens in the ET hypothesis. But there was also this paranormal factor where there was definitely some kind of interdimensional being, for lack of a better term, that was involved kind of mediating and overshadowing the whole relationship and feeding off the energy produced mm-hmm. through emotions and sexual energy. And so oftentimes, like in The Dark Side of Cupid, I pretty much narrowed it down to that there's some kind of third-party entity being observed in some capacity that is believed to be really the primary reason behind what is the energy vampirism issue in love relationships.
So, are you saying that okay, you know, two people meet and the sparks fly, but there are also uh-huh. maybe some destructive aspects to that relationship, that it is possible that they've been brought together by some kind of supernatural nefarious Cupid?
Yep, that's absolutely right. And, you know, the whole Cupid myth was something that I looked into actually for the book to try to find out, you know, what's really behind these gods in our myths, and are they perhaps the same ones that are interacting with us today under different guises? And so I looked up, you know, the Cupid thing, where there's actually a good Cupid and a bad Cupid. And I think it's like an evil twin kind of situation where the good Cupid, he will, you know, shoot forth golden arrows and the people fall in love, and it's actually a good kind of relationship and they don't have a lot of problems. Like, let's say it's a true soulmate kind of thing. Whereas the bad Cupid, who is, you know, the Avenger, he will shoot forth lead arrows and the people will actually be connected to one another when have a high connection and sexual chemistry, but it's more lustful and there's a lot of chaos and misery and jealousy and just trouble. Okay. So really this is more about the dark side. Although in the beginning, a lot of these relationships, it appears really magical and wonderful. And there definitely is a high connection that is beyond the norm, where it really feels like soulmates. But as it proceeds, then certain characteristics start to manifest in what I call the syndrome and the red flags, where there may be something wrong, basically. And it really depends on the couple in terms of, you know, if they really have this kind of wonderful connection, but there's a lot of, let's say, interference on a paranormal level, then it's really up to both partners to do the work of expanding their awareness and healing whatever issues they have and becoming aware of it and working on that together so that the relationship can work, because the connection really is profound, actually, in these cases. So that's what I say is, like, if they really think it's a true soulmate connection, then the awareness and the ability and willingness to work on all issues related to that will be mutual. It will be a mutuality of awareness and dedication towards the relationship, no matter how weird things are.
Now, do we see this in abusive relationships, whether it's, you know, typically we think about the man being abusive to the woman, or possibly the woman being abusive to the man? Is this, does this play a part, do you think, in these relationships?
Oh, definitely. In terms of, if I would go forward a bit about what are the characteristics, let's say, of a dark side of Cupid relationship, I could define a little bit. My book describes paranormally influenced relationships where the primary dynamic is not only like an energy vampirism, emotional vampirism, high drama, chaos, but there's some kind of what's perceived as a third-party entity, either orchestrating the relationship, or you're able to observe it directly in the relationship, or hosting one partner, right? Or like almost like a partial possession kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's different beings that are observed, and it's not just aliens. So I could just go ahead and give you this is what's in my book, like the red flags of what I call a dark side of Cupid love connection. My first book was about it was called a love bite or an alien love bite. It's somewhat similar, but really it's not necessarily the same. So that's why I did the second book. But to go on about, let's say, the red flags, unusual sensations in your solar plexus, root chakra and your heart, precognitive dreams of the partner, astral sex or psychic dreamwalking visits, where there's actually a very deep psychic connection that's out of the ordinary for really like how much you like the person. You just feel this super powerful connection, sometimes immediately. Okay. And then very powerful sexual chemistry. And then you may experience emotional or physical draining, especially if the relationship proceeds. And you may have a feeling of being watched as if you're a puppet in a drama myth, or maybe some of the paranormal things start happening where you just start feeling watched and strange things happening. And of course, love obsession is part of that. And then within the book, I go into what I would define as let's say, a dark side of Cupid relationship. If it had two of the three main symptoms, which I will describe, then I would say that's probably a dark side of Cupid relationship. Because in some cases, of course, there may be true connections that are magical and wonderful and that doesn't have anything to do with orchestration, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't want to say it's like all bad, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway, what I call it is the unholy triad of the dark side of Cupid, the symptoms. So the first set of symptoms, which is kind of a broad-based category, but would be like, this is what really defines a lot of the unusualness of it. It would be magical and supernatural elements, such as deja vus, synchronicities, omens, spirit visitations, astral meldings, precognitive visions, dreams, and paranormal activity. And then on the second set, you would have emotional highs and crashing lows and emotional draining, which would denote like some kind of emotional or psychic vampirism. Mm-hmm. And then the third element, which is like the real truth teller, would be the emotional manipulation and the psychopathology element, which could involve partial possession or full-on hosting, what I call, or possession of one of the partners who actually is acting as the psychic vampire or is actually a conduit for another entity that's actually overshadowing them. So that's actually what I think is the etiology of the psychic vampirism, although there may be some people believe that there are true, let's say, vampire people or psychic vampires that are maybe like another type of species, but they look human. And I think that's true, but they're actually more rare than what I'm discussing. Because what I'm discussing is really a kind of vampirism that appears to be mediated through another interdimensional being that is parasiting one of the partners or perhaps both. Mm-hmm. So let's say the first set of symptoms, like the magical and supernatural events, that alone doesn't necessarily denote, let's say, that it's a dark side of Cupid relationship. But if you have, let's say, two of the three that I described, or all three, then it's definitely there's something funny going on, and there's probably some kind of interference going on. And so you could tell by really, you know, how you feel and the strange things that are happening that are out of the ordinary, as well as the really strong, what I call the psychic linking going on, and especially the, what I call the astral visits or the dream invasions and the paranormal activity kinds of things that happen.
Right.
So, and that could include, you know, some of this UFO kind of stuff as well, but not necessarily.
Now, here's a question for you, and I'm going to ask you about this. We try to keep it pretty PG-13 here at the most, but do these, I'll call them dark side Cupids, do they use specific things they know someone is looking for as bait to get somebody into one of these destructive, potentially destructive relationships? For example, you know, you've mentioned this a couple of times, but, you know, I think we're all familiar with the concept that a particular couple may just really hit it off, for lack of a better word, in the bedroom, that there may be, you know, sexual sparks, a real physical, like intense attraction. Do these dark side Cupids use that kind of thing, along with other things perhaps, as bait, as it were?
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, usually the sexual chemistry is the best you've ever had, you know, in some of these things. And I mean, I think there's reasons for that that have a paranormal, interdimensional, and energetic component to it, which actually I kind of describe in more detail in the book, some of why that might be happening. although I think there are what I call vulnerability factors that could make someone maybe an easier target for one of these predatory types of psychic vampires. And, you know, really, the lack of awareness is a big one. But someone who actually has really good high energy and a lot of light, so to speak, is sometimes a target because they shine so bright and they have this wonderful energy. Or people who are, let's say, overly trusting, they may be in the helping fields, or they're just too trusting and gullible because they're not aware that something like this could exist in a predatory fashion. So actually, I go into that in the book in terms of, you know, what to watch for and the vulnerability factor. And some people tend to be targets for other reasons other than maybe their energy, but the energy seems to be the biggest one, and everything's kind of conglomerated around the primary energy feeding source for this other entity.
Now, you had mentioned something about being able to turn some of these relationships around. In other words, are there these relationships where they could be very good and very productive and healthy relationships, but this kind of dark side Cupid has kind of interjected itself and made it a destructive thing?
Yeah.
So if you find yourself in these, at least in some cases, it sounds like there's hope.
Oh, yes. I mean, I've run across people who believed they've had something like that where it felt orchestrated because they've had them before, because they were someone who had, let's say, multiple alien visitation histories and it's in their family line, and where they actually made it work because the other partner was aware and was willing to work on whatever issues that could be a causative factor for these things to happen, so that both people work together on the issues instead of one person just doing all the work or the other person just being totally unaware and being easily manipulated. So it really takes an awareness and a willingness on both parties to do that. And I think the trouble is, and a lot of the people that report these to me, it's usually just one of the people reporting it because the other one was like completely unaware, or they, you know, they had an addiction issue, or they just couldn't deal with it, or they just they refused to go deeper into what was happening and they just didn't want to deal with it. So that's why it takes two to tango. Some people think, oh, well, you know, this is a true twin flame thing and one of the partners has a lot of issues and it tends to reflect maybe some elements in them that they need to work out, kind of thing. And that can work, but to me, the bottom line is if you want to have a relationship that works and it's mutual, then you want both parties to be pretty much equal in terms of their awareness and willingness to work on the relationship. It shouldn't be one-sided where one person is really the one being fed on all the time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that's why I say, you know, it can work, but people got to be willing to really explore and work on whatever they need to work on.
On the flip side of that, I suspect that there's some cases where you should just walk away. For example, we have a true crime podcast, and we just did a show about abusive relationships and women who find themselves in them and then they disappear. Yeah. They've been done away with by their spouse or significant other, and it's very, very frightening. And when you think about physical abuse and things like that, I would assume there are some cases you would say, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but some cases where if you find yourself in one of these relationships and it reaches a certain point, maybe the best advice is to just walk away.
Yes. Like, yeah, definitely. I mean, and I go in that in the book, I go into boundary setting and a lot of the classic relationship counseling issues that you would assume would be, okay, you know, let's check out the red flags for previous abuse that could set up yourself to have numbed out about, you know, what's going on, because a lot of times people who have had abuse histories, for example, may choose abusive partners later in life if they have unresolved, unhealed traumas of abuse. And that's kind of a logical deduction. But, you know, what I've found is that it's more of a complicated issue in terms of these dark side of Cupid relationships, because basically what we have is a predator in the severe cases, for example. In the severe cases, we have predatory people, or people have been taken over by something else, which is a severe vampire kind of thing, and they will use deception and manipulation that goes above and beyond what you would see normally or think is normal. So in other words, I've had people who were, you know, healthy women who really didn't have much abuse in their histories, or if they did, they pretty much worked it out and they're like successful people. They may be powerful women, but then they've had a relationship with one of these like weird hosted vampires that seems to be controlled by something else. And they reported to me that they've never had anything like this that was so emotionally and spiritually damaging that they couldn't even believe it. They didn't think such things existed. In fact, you know, one of them reported to me, and this was a woman who actually had had an early rape in her life in her 20s. And it was a violent crime kind of thing. And she, you know, did the counseling, got over it and stuff. And when she had one of these dark side of Cupid relationships, and it was a dating thing where they weren't even together for very long. And there wasn't like physical abuse, but the emotional and spiritual aspects of the vampirism and the crazy making was actually more damaging in her perspective than the earlier rape. So when I talk about damage, these things can be extremely damaging in ways that you really wouldn't suspect, because there's something predatory and unusual about it.
Now, do you see things like, I mean, truly kind of supernatural, strange things like stigmata? And I'm not talking about abuse, physical abuse from a partner. I'm talking about, you know, bruises or stigmata, or those kind of thing appearing out of nowhere, any kind of strange physical, supernatural type stuff.
Oh yeah. In fact, one of the couples that I was working with, they had a they had an incubus spirit, a female incubus spirit that would be basically harassing them, their couple, and their entire family. And they would literally, you know, not only wake up with marks on, you know, scratch marks, bruises, but even in broad daylight, within moments, you know, feeling the presence of this being, and then they would just appear on their skin, like marks and bruises just instantly appear. So instead of like stigmata, of course, it would be, you know, marks and bruises and that kind of thing. And yeah, we do see that actually in those cases. Sometimes you will see pinprick marks in a certain type of design, like a triangle design, or in certain areas of the body. You may have little bruises or marks that, you know, you don't know why they're there. A lot of times there's bruises that happen too.
What do you think the most misunderstood part of this is, or the part that kind of confuses people?
What I think is, you know, when you have one of these connections, it's definitely powerful and you will feel love. And one of the reasons why I think, based on some reports that I've had, not only recently, but in my other book, The Love Bite, was these beings, whoever they are, sometimes they're described as aliens. Sometimes they may be something other than that. And I go into that in my second book. But they can somehow manipulate or extract what we call the soul essence out of the heart chakra area in your energy body, and literally take that out and then put it into someone else, and then also reverse it so that you literally contain the essence of that other person in you, which is why you have such a powerful connection, because they're literally in you and you actually feel their thoughts and their feelings and their sleep cycle and everything. I mean, it's like being completely linked. So there's something that happens that links them in a strange way. So that, and you really do feel true love and true connection. It's just that it's being mediated by something else, and they're like yanking the emotional chain and manipulating them like puppets just to feed off of them. So one would have to retrieve that soul essence part and really see if this is a true connection or if it was something manipulated, and see how they feel. So yeah, I mean, you can kind of repeat your question. I think I got off key there.
Well, just the idea, what confuses people, what throws people for a loop with this? What is the most misunderstood part of this?
Oh, probably the lack of awareness is number one, that they think anything could exist. And then the lack of awareness of perception on subtle levels of reality. So they may only see the effects or feel the effects, but they're not actually perceiving what's going on behind the scenes. And then some people really want to believe, oh, it's my twin flame, it has to be good, and oh, well, they'll change, and it's just this, and they just go on and on and on and allow themselves to be manipulated, thinking that it's, you know, divinely ordained because it feels so wonderful, but they fail to recognize that, you know, it could be a manipulation. And they fail to recognize that there really are beings out there who do these things. So that's probably the biggest confusion. Or they're perceiving things through a different window, what I call even the extraterrestrial window of the worldview is somewhat tainted in terms of understanding the true nature of these beings and maybe their origin. And I think actually a paranormal view and an interdimensional view is more apt, because these beings are not necessarily from other planets. You know, they have a certain characteristic. And if their characteristic is life force vampirism or energy vampirism or manipulation and control in any way, then that tells me that there's something deeper going on that's beyond this whole ET thing. So it's like really what people want to believe, to be honest with you, and what they're not facing inside themselves. So you really, I mean, the way to understand what's happening is to connect back with your heart and their true divine essence. We can call it our soul and organic life. And the more we're connected with that, the more truth we're going to just intuitively know, okay, like this is not right for me because I had this feeling and my intuition said stay away. So listening to that is actually better than using a rational mind sometimes.
And perhaps in that answer you've gotten into it a bit, but we've talked about the condition, the symptoms, the disease. What is the prescription? How do you fix this?
Well, that's a good question. I go into that in the book where I talk about, like, let's say what the vulnerabilities are, what the red flags are. And so you basically go through a checklist and, okay, do I need to have better boundaries? Let's learn about what boundaries are in relationships and how to know, do I know how to set my boundaries, or do I have a boundary issue going on based on how I was raised, and or if there was an abuse in your history? So the boundary thing, learning how to set boundaries is basically a classic thing you learn in relationships and counseling and therapy. Then closing what I call the windows of paranormal access. And let's say if there is a darkness, or I don't know, we can call it evil. I hate to use those black and white terms, but closing the windows of access and invasiveness by, let's say if there is a paranormal being or a demon or an entity, finding out how those windows could have been opened in your life by certain practices, people, relationships, homes, locations, and closing those windows. And that's actually a very broad spectrum right there, because how these windows are opened are, they happen more often than we can really imagine. I mean, even let's say playing with the Ouija boards or doing channeling or taking vows with certain shamans or magicians or, spiritual gurus who actually have entities in them, working through them, then you can open yourself up to this kind of interdimensional invasiveness. So, start taking vows in certain large religions, even we've come to learn. So, yeah, the abuse and trauma can leave holes inside your awareness and your energy body. So you need to like release the traumas and work through that. So a lot of it is really a therapeutic kind of solution, as well as a spiritual solution in terms of closing the windows of how these interdimensional beings are invading and learning the rules of the game, which I've come to learn later after doing this so many years that what I thought was true really was not, and that there's a lot of disinformation and corruption in many of our made religions and belief systems and science. So it's learning the rules of the game. And really how I learned this was not only trial and error, but also the games of, let's say, spiritual warfare, what's really happening in spiritual warfare. And also with ancient shamanic traditions like what I call the Aboriginal Dreamtime healing. And there's a method that I learned called holographic kinetics, which is a type of, it's based on the Aboriginal laws of lore. And Steve Richards is the one who actually started that and designed this whole method. But basically, it's learning what are the rules and laws of this universal and holographic reality that we live in. And from these ancient cultures who weren't basically infected by the religious mind control programs that have been on our planet for a long time. So a lot of the lies that keep us victims to these kinds of vampiristic things have to do with the belief systems and the religions that have been imposed upon us and told us to believe these things. And in fact, they're not necessarily true. They're corrupted by some of the same beings doing these things, you know?
That's interesting.
So it's like, oh my goodness, you know, you have to flip-flop your belief systems and realize what are the true rules of the game here and what is the true essence of our divine presence that is within all humans, and connecting with that organic source of love and life, and connecting with that to be able to have a greater sense of discernment and protection against this parasitic thing. This is really, when you boil down to it, it's anti-life, anti-organic life, anti-love, and it has this mechanistic, artificial, vampiristic, parasitic, predatory consciousness. And it may work through different kinds of beings, like it can take over many kinds of beings, including other dimensional beings, other ETs, or even humans. Mm-hmm. So it's how to identify the energy itself and aligning with the life force, positive, creative energy, and then learning how to detect the corrupt, negative, vampiristic energy, and then setting boundaries against that, and then making yourself much more powerful in terms of your spiritual and emotional immune system. So that's how I, you know, the solutions, basically. And it really is a therapeutic thing, which is, and belief systems, and learning, like, what belief systems do I really need to let go of to have a better idea of what the truth is from a more pure perspective inside my heart and soul.
Now, I'm interested because you have a mainstream background in psychology with your master's. How have you married that and made that work together with the work with it, what you're doing? Because I'm guessing, and you tell me if I'm wrong, that if we kind of presented the themes that we've talked about today in a mainstream academic setting, the response might be, well, that's kind of woo-woo and out there.
Yeah,
so right. So how do you reconcile the two? How do you marry the two? What's been your experience?
Well, I mean, actually, they're both valuable. I mean, in terms of psychology, I learned a lot of valuable information, although my emphasis was on marriage and family and relationship from more of a humanistic perspective instead of some of the classical psychiatric modes that, you know, some of the more mainstream people do. But in terms of like basic relationship counseling and empathy and interpersonal dynamics, setting boundaries, healing core traumas through releasing the negative energy, and then replacing that with positive self-beliefs and self-confidence. That's very valid and very valuable in terms of counseling, which that's a lot of the mainstream, they do that anyway. The part that really veers off is the paranormal element and learning how to understand that there's more things involved than just current life emotional psychology issues. There's also a spiritual issue here that needs to be addressed. And sometimes you can't really deal with the whole package unless we address that element with truth and with power. So that's where standard psychology, you can do all the counseling you want, but if there's an attached entity or demon or you're under a curse by a black magician or something, then you have to deal with that issue from another perspective that may be, you know, not within the mainstream ideas of even reality. But I've learned not to need their approval in order to be effective in my work, because a lot of what's in mainstream education, media, medicine is corrupt and false. So it's learning the hard way, and, you know, not everything is true that is claiming to be true out there.
Well, it is a very interesting topic, something different than we've done in the last 9 years of podcasts. So I really appreciate your time today, The Dark Side of Cupid. Where can people go to find more information about you and also pick up on your books, this one and also the Love Bite?
Oh, yes. Well, The Dark Side of Cupid and The Love Bite is available through Amazon.com and also Barnes & Noble in the U.S. And I think now it's available in Canada. And a lot of information you can get from my website, which is evelorgan.com. And I have a blog and, you know, tons of information and articles about other areas of my research, which included, you know, the alien abduction element, some of the mind control, some of the spiritual warfare, and then mostly the relationship, what I call the love bite stuff, where you think you have an interfered relationship, what might be happening and what you can do about it. So my website is just chock full of information.
Well, Eve Lorgan, thank you so much for joining us today on The Other Side.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed that, and hopefully you don't end up on the dark side of Cupid looking for love in all the wrong places, to quote that old country song. And now we're going to talk to Sarah Spencer about writing paranormal romance. Now, today we're going to talk about a topic that I frankly don't know a lot about, and I've not read many books on it. Now, that may sound like a weird thing to admit to, but I admit to it. I haven't read any books on it, in fact, to be honest, but I know it's a very popular genre out there, particularly with people who are interested in the paranormal, but maybe with a little spice. We're talking about paranormal romance. We have an author of that genre with us, I'm talking about Sarah Spencer. Now, she is a marketer, and she recently wrote her first novel. It's called A Man to Honor You, and it is a paranormal romance. And Sarah approached me on social media about, or an email, about being on the program. And I thought, well, this would be a great opportunity to talk about this genre because I know it's extremely popular these days. I don't know a lot about it, but I suspect there are a lot of you out there who are interested in it. So we wanted to share. Sarah, congratulations on your new book and welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you for having me, Jim. I'm honored to be on the show, especially Whitley Strieber was on just, what, a week or so ago? My goodness.
Yes. We had
wow.
We had Whitley Strieber on the Paranormal Podcast. That was a lot of fun. We really enjoyed it. But again, we enjoy talking to a lot of different people, a lot of different stages in their career. So it's exciting to talk to someone who is starting theirs as a writer, particularly in this kind of exploding genre that is becoming more and more popular every day. I guess I would start off with, you know, when you're looking to create a book or write your first book, there are a lot of different topics, I'm sure, that come to mind. Why did you kind of light upon the topic, the genre of paranormal romance?
Sure. Yeah. Well, something happened to me about 13 years ago. I started having a recurring dream over and over and over again. And it was it was unlike any other dream I ever had, where I would wake up and not be sure which was reality and which was a dream. And I'm a pretty steady shooter here. So, you know, it was something that puzzled me for many, many years, and the dream kept happening. So it inspired me to write A Man to Honor You. And basically, it's a dream that keeps happening where, well, actually, can I read an excerpt so it'll
Absolutely.
Sort of frame the story?
Absolutely.
Okay, so the dream begins where our main character, who is named Sarah, as well as myself, she's a newly empty nested mom, throws herself into her work, and she has these 13 years of having this dream, and she writes down every single nuance, every single detail of this dream, until one time it actually happens that she sees his picture across her computer screen on a dating site, where two worlds start to collide. And the story is about how she goes to find this man that's been in her dream that actually enters into this new reality. So let me read an excerpt of the dream. It's called The Dream Begins. He sat on the edge of the bed, caressing her hands softly in his. His deep brown eyes searched for even a glimpse of the lover who once stood by his side. Her eyes flutter briefly, and he leans in closer, his rumpled dress shirt and blue tie askew, as if tugged on with the rigor of a high-end deal gone terribly wrong. A raven-haired 6-year-old share her father's intense stare, and a 4-year-old tow-headed son thrust Crayola drawings into her face, eager for any recognition from a woman they so desperately wanted to see them, even if just for a moment. He gently moves the drawings aside on a waiting side table. "Mommy's not ready for that yet," he says. The image fades and darkens. The break in his voice tears through the fabric of a dream. We've lost her. Oh, God, we've lost her again. And then I wake, startled into my reality by looking at the bookcase across from my bed. And ever since that morning, this dream has visited me. I don't dream about it often, but it always is brief, and it always incites a heaviness in me that I find hard to shake. The dream has visited me for 13 years and transformed from a weird curiosity to a manic thunder that causes me to turn it over, over, over and over in my mind. Is it a dream? Is it real? Is it my imagination? The few I've told my story regale me with sidechair analysis of "you're viewing your male self." Perhaps, but knowing my soul as intimately as I do, my male self would fall short in the sheer devotion exuded from these brief exchanges I am privy to in stilted time. So that's how the story begins. And so she starts researching, why is she having these dreams? And she starts watching different documentaries. She's a big fan of documentaries, and she's also a big fan of tarot cards throughout this story, because she figures, well, the tarot cards are as good as any other counselor that she could pay $60 or $100 an hour to view. She might as well go and get counseling from these tarot cards. So the story plays with a lot of those different ideas throughout A Man to Honor You.
Now, So there are a lot of themes that happened in your life, and so you kind of use this as almost a catharsis in some way. That yes. there's parallels to your story and the story in the book.
Yeah, well, my life isn't as exciting as hers is, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of parallels. The dreams are very real. The way that I would see her, you know, sometimes the children would come in and visit her, and they would be much older. Sometimes they were younger, and so I was trying to get a frame for when this all happened, when this all took place. And there was a time when I actually had a dream, and I saw her face. Which was really an exciting moment in my life. You dream about an activity happening for all these years, and you don't really know who it's happening to. And then you see the face, and you say, wow, it is me, but it's not me. So that was really an intriguing part of the story, and it is written about in this book as well.
Now, I have to ask about the paranormal romance genre in general. I have to say something. I don't want you to take it the wrong way. I don't kind of understand it. I mean, I don't understand it from the standpoint of, you know, romances with, and I don't think your book is like this, but romances with like semi-human, semi-human creatures and creatures with wings. I see some of
vampires,
these.
Vampires.
Yeah, I see some of these pictures, you know, and you see a guy, like a big muscular guy with wings, in an embrace with this beautiful woman. So I don't quite get it, but I don't know that I'm the target market. So here's the question. Why do you think that paranormal romance has taken off the way it has?
Well, I think that there's an awakening that's going on with people. I mean, I can't speak for vampire romances and that genre. While it's very interesting and intriguing, I think that there's a lot of us that are looking out there and saying, well, the world is a lot bigger than we think. And there's a lot of, if you pull the curtain back, if you will, it seems science is actually catching up with us as far as validating some of this stuff. I mean, a few years ago, I would have been very hesitant to tell the story of, yeah, I've had a recurring dream, and I think it might be a real story. I don't know if I'm remote viewing someone's life, or if that is my life, or you know what. But it is definitely different from a regular dream, and I think that people are interested in parallel universe and string theory and multiverse, and those are all coming into the forefront as far as research is concerned with quantum physics. So it's from someone who is very imaginative and very intuitive, it's really nice to know that there's some scientific evidence to back it up rather than just a bunch of woo-woo. So that, I feel, is an intriguing part to a story, is something that can happen to someone who's rather ordinary and living through something extraordinary, where they're viewing someone else's life parallel to their own. I think that that's very captivating. And it's definitely written to a woman, and in my instance, it's really for 40-something women who might be looking for love and may have given up. And it's just, no, don't give up. Just go and enjoy the experience. Don't question it, and to go in and just experience it fully.
In your book, you talk about the idea of, I believe, parallel universes, that type of thing. Can you talk about parallel universe, multiverse, the differences, and how does it play into your story?
Yeah. I'm certainly not certified. I'm not a physicist or anything like that. But what happens is she starts to have this dream, and she really wants some answers because it's very, very different from anything she's experienced. So she starts watching these documentaries. There's one out there that is real. It's called Parallel Lives, Parallel Universe. And it does talk about the parallel universe concept, where we can have a parallel life going on at the same time. There's a movie out there. Have you heard of it? It's called Down the Rabbit Hole. Have you heard
of
that? You have, okay. Mm-hmm. So they talk about a lot of this in that movie, where she's the photographer, and she has different outcomes of this wedding scenario that she's filming in that particular story. Well, in A Man to Honor You, she's thinking, well, I have this life as I'm a recently empty nested mom. I live alone. I don't have a lover. But I do know that there is an existence out there where I do have two children and I do have a husband who loves me beyond anyone I've ever met in my life. And I want to connect to him somehow. And how do I do that? Is that even possible? And so she's really mired in this of, man, which life do I want to choose? And do we have the capability of choosing one life over another if it's actually unveiled to us? So that's how the parallel universe works. Now, multiverse, some people talk about your existence happening in infinite numbers of universes, if you will. So that's the platform there where you're living the same life, but it might be slightly different in different universes, but it all happens at the same time. And then there's also the whole concept of time. Time is an illusion where time can be happening simultaneously. So it's all of these things that she explores in the story.
Now, one thing that I would have to think, if you have a paranormal romance book, one of the key parts of that would be the romance part. So in your mind, what makes a good romance story? Because it's been done so many times. I suppose you could say that about any type of story. Every story's been told, or most stories have been told. But how do you make an exciting, interesting, engaging story without crossing certain lines, but still make something that's interesting and noteworthy and enjoyable?
I think finding something lovable about each character is really important. Is something that, you want to find the vulnerability in the character. You want to find something that audiences can relate to. There's one story that I really love in the book. She starts dating this born-again Christian named Jason, and he asks her all these questions in the beginning of them dating, and she ends up saying, oh, you've got stiff thumbs. You know, that means that you're stubborn. He goes, oh, well, we don't do palm reading. And she goes, oh, well. And then they start talking about when their birthdays are. And she goes, oh, well, you must be a Gemini. I'm a Taurus. And he goes, well, we don't do astrology either. And he says, well, I thought that you were a Christian. And she says, well, yeah, but I was kicked out of church when I was 2 years old. And so he's just mortified by this. You know, he's gone through this dating thing and his religion has a certain code of conduct and she's not following that. But they still connect and they still find what's good about each other. And he laments to her, he says, I really enjoy you, but we're just not yoked properly. We're not on the same trajectory as far as religion is concerned. And she wants to transcend all of that. And she really looks for the good in each man that she comes across of what is something that we do have in common, what is something that we can enjoy together. And so that makes that character really solid. And then, of course, there's Jack, who is the man that's in her dream, and she's trying to get to him. And she ends up, Jason helps her find Jack and helps her connect with him. Even though he's starting to fall for her, he recognizes that she's really in love with this guy. And then he's questioning, do you really love the guy or do you like the idea of him? So it's all of those questions that start to be asked in this novel. And getting back to your question, what makes a good romance? It's the relationships between the characters and how do they work? I mean, most of the romances, you'd see this rivalry between these two guys. And in fact, there's nothing like that. It continues where he's helping her because he recognizes this is something sacred. This is something that has transcended time, has transcended space, and he wants to connect her, and he realizes that it's something that's greater than both of them, whether it's God or your higher power or the universe, whatever. And so it's really a beautiful story of him helping her and each of them helping each other connect to the person that they're really supposed to be with. And I think that's what makes it unique, is it's a unique plot twist.
Another thing that I think is interesting, if you look at, for example, movies, and you look at all of the romance comedies and different things that are out there, you would have the general sense, if you were an alien and you came from another planet and watched this, that nobody fell in love after the age of 29.
Yes, exactly.
Can you talk about, having more mature characters and how that plays into it and how their life situation might be a little bit different than, you know, the carefree 25-year-olds that fall in love in all the movies we see?
Yes, absolutely. What happens with Sarah is that she becomes an empty nester unexpectedly, and she's totally devastated because she doesn't, when we're moms, and especially single moms, which, you know, this character was, you identify with, I'm my son's mom, you know, that's my job, that's what I do. And then when you become an empty nester, your kid goes off to college or, you know, whatever happens, you're left with this gaping hole. Who am I? I'm not really my son or my daughter's mom anymore. Who am I? And that is what triggers her to, she now has time to look at this dream more carefully and look at her dating life. And so she decides, she's so lonely, she goes on a dating site and she starts flipping through photographs and stuff. And she makes a few false starts, which are kind of amusing. And then she sees the photograph flash across her computer screen of her lover from her dream, and blows her mind, drops her laptop, and, you know, wonders whether she should actually talk to him or not. And then even if she does, what would she say in a first date? How would she broach that topic? And would she be so terribly disappointed that she wouldn't want to pursue it? So that's what happens in this story. And then there's also a lot of, especially women who reach 40s, 50s, 60s, where you're saying, am I attractive enough for someone? Is that something that somebody's really going to be interested in? Are they going to want to pursue me? And so that's another piece of it that comes through in the story. So yeah, definitely it's a romance for older people, but you see the success of The Notebook, and there were some older people in that. I think that this is a story that needs to be told, that yes, there is romance after 40, and no, it's not ridiculous to think that you won't find love. It's definitely out there for you. You just have to look beyond the physical.
And something that I think is interesting in the increasing explosion of romance books in this new genre, or newer genre, I guess, of paranormal romance, because I guess in one form or another, it's been around for a long time. But is the e-reader. It's my understanding, a lot of people theorize, when you look at the success of something like 50 Shades of Grey, that the reason that they're doing so well is that people can read them in privacy. There's not the big back, you know, the big paperback with the, you know, the stylized cover of the couple in a deep embrace. So if somebody has a lunch break, or if they're commuting on public transit or wherever it might be, they can flip out their e-reader and nobody is, there's no one any the wiser to it. How much stock do you put into that as for the explosion of popularity, even more than it ever was before?
Oh, a lot. Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, if a woman can read a story that has some sensuality to it and she can read it discreetly, then yes, absolutely, she's going to do that. And I think that women are learning more about their sensuality than they have in the past. Men obviously have something, they're very visual, whereas a woman telling a story is going to be something that's a lot more of a sensuous experience for her. So it's a perfect marriage for women who want to have that sensuality and want to have that fantasy, to be able to read in this particular way. The other thing that's been really positive is iTunes and, you know, having audiobooks and telling the story that way and having a nice voice to listen to the story. That's something that I'd really like to do next with A Man to Honor You is do an audiobook of it as well. So, a lot of us, we don't have time to sit down, sadly, and read, which, you know, we're on the go, we're working, we're doing a million things at once. So a lot of us will listen to a story in the car or put in our earbuds and go for a walk or a run or a bike ride and listen to a story. Well, your podcast is a perfect example of that, Jim.
Yep.
You know, people want to get their information in very different ways. And books are great. You know, I wanted to do the self-publishing because with my business with internet marketing, I have a company called Got Clicks. And I've had some authors come through saying, do you know anything about self-publishing? And I didn't know at the time, you know, how to do that or the way to go about it. And it's actually quite simple. There really isn't a lot that goes into it. Amazon was extremely helpful to me, and I really didn't have to invest a lot of money in it. I had a story that I wanted to tell. I shared the story with a few friends, and it's really started to be downloaded by a lot of people, which is so wonderful. And you know, I've really enjoyed the feedback that I've gotten from people on it. And you know, people want me to write a second story from Jack's point of view, from the other side of the looking glass, if you will. And that's an intriguing question that comes up. So yeah, I think doing the ebook has been fabulous for authors. It really gives you a lot of freedom to try it, test out an idea with very little money into it.
Well, I've got to say, I published my first book traditionally through a publisher, second book self-published. And for me, the self-publishing route has been tremendous. It was really a kick to go into Barnes & Noble and see your book there. But above that, the self-publishing route has been the better route for me. Not saying anything against publishers or my former publisher or anything like that. They're nice people. But just for me, it was far more empowering. And you get to control it. And that's the great thing. And make sure that it's done the way you want to, priced the way you want to, presented the way you want to. And I just kind of like this. These podcasts, just love to have that flexibility creatively.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you, Jim. And a lot of people think when they go to a publisher that, you know, the publisher is going to take care of all your marketing and, you know, which to a certain extent they do. But some of these publishing companies as of late are asking you to do the heavy lifting. You know, you've got to get your Facebook page up there. You've got to get the likes. You've got to get the attention. You know, they'll help you somewhat, but they don't really. From the authors I've spoken to, you're kind of on your own. And that's the surprise that some of the authors have come across. And so they're like, well, geez, I should have just self-published the darn thing, put the money in my pocket.
Well,
the
thing is, and you know, I could talk about this all day. I don't want to get off on a tangent for the sake of my audience, but I will say this, you know, the company I worked with was great and they helped set up interviews and so forth. But at the end of the day, unless you are in the kind of James Patterson, Stephen King kind of category, a publisher is not going to handle a lot of that for you. The average author, even the one that's published, most of that onus is going to be on you.
Yes.
To do the marketing. So it is, you know, we make our books professional. I have professionally designed covers. I have editing. I have professional formatting. So the product you're getting is the same. But a lot of the other things are not the same, like the flexibility on pricing and so forth and the creative freedom and so forth. So for me, it's the right decision, at least at this point. I always keep an open mind, but for me, it's the way to go. And I love it because people like you can tell your stories. Do you have any final thoughts on this book and your future paranormal romance writing efforts?
Yeah, like I said, I really, you know, it depends how the book goes, but so far it's been getting a lot more attention than I thought it would, which is really nice. But yeah, I would love to write from the perspective of Jack, you know, from his side of the looking glass and what happened to them and how did he end up with his wife in the hospital? And, you know, these are questions in my reality that I will always ask and always wonder. But it would be really delightful to write from his perspective of what happened to his wife and writing that just the tenderness that he had in these brief glimpses that I had into that dream state of him always holding her hand and the way that he looked at her and the genuine love that was there. He would be with her no matter what. And she's totally vegetative. You know, there's no response from her whatsoever. But he was so dedicated. And that was the question that came up all the time was, you know, why does he stay with her? Why doesn't he just leave? Why doesn't he go have an affair or, you know, hey, sleep with somebody? You know? But he doesn't. There's just something really honorable about him. And I think every woman wants to have a man to honor her. And that's what this man represents, is just a very honorable, dignified, loving man with all of the hallmarks of the perfect partner for a woman. So that's the perspective I would love to write from in the next book, is just getting his voice and getting his story. I think that would be a really, really fun adventure. I'd love to write it.
Well, it's been a pleasure to speak with you and to share information about your book and this genre, which I'm sure many people are interested in out there. So I hope that you enjoyed it. Sarah, where can people pick up the book?
Yes, you can go to the website amantohonoryou.com. It's amantohonoryou.com, and you can buy it on Amazon. It's available in paperback and also in an ebook.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jim. It was a pleasure.
And thank you for joining us on The Other Side. I certainly appreciate it. And we'll talk to you next time. Happy reading, everybody.